Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure.
Though I believe it may be a little bit optimistic to claim that we have boys and girls listening to this particular program.
Well, I think some of the people who are technically adults
maybe consider themselves
may
boys
fall
and
into
girls.
That right. category. Yeah. Right. Like the good old boys.
I keep waiting to grow up. I'm not sure I've ever been to that point.
Well, you know, there's the good old boy network. And then there's the girls that go down to the
That on the internet?
I don't know. I don't know where it is, but I've heard about the good old boy network. I've never actually been in the good old boy network, so I've missed it somehow. But it may be a network on television, but since I don't watch television, I could easily mess that one up too. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is a peculiar presentation in that it has a double identity, which means that we're slightly schizophrenic. Actually, we're more than slightly schizophrenic. We are just out and out there, multiple personalities. And it obviously is a radio program because you're listening to it, if you are, if anyone is. And secondly, it is also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas. Now, we've investigated this coincidence extensively and come to the conclusion that there is a relationship in that the principals in the investment advisory firm and the two guys who talk on the radio on Saturday morning, both the two sets of people have the same names and they look alike. So we've concluded that there's a high probability that there's a correlation there. So it is. But this is the radio program. And if today is Saturday, August 1st, where you are, you're welcome to give us a call and ask us any questions or make any comments about anything that has to do with economics or investing or finance. Do not ask questions, and please don't make comments about anything that has to do with organized sports, because we are pitifully ignorant in that area.
Well, you can do it, but only if you wish to embarrass us thoroughly, because we won't know what you're talking about.
Right. Well, actually, if we do try to guess at what you're talking about, we'll probably get it so wrong that it'll be humorous.
We haven't watched sports since the Bulls won the Super Bowl.
Well, now we do concern ourselves with the Bulls and the Bears.
Right. Right.
So I think there are Chicago Bears. I have no idea what kind of a team it is, but they're Chicago Bears, right?
I believe that they're a little league team. Could be.
I think they play football.
See, as you can see, we don't
follow
sports.
And then you have the Bulls. Are they also in Chicago?
I believe so.
So you have the Bulls and the Bears in
the
same town.
That's about to go bankrupt.
Yeah.
So I think the Bears are beating the Bulls. I didn't think they were supposed to play each other, but in Chicago, they are definitely.
I don't know. If you look at the market in their bonds, it's actually more like a bull market. Because their bonds have really high interest rates compared
right.
with other bonds.
Which is one of the
scary things. And
people
are buying them like there's no tomorrow. So that's, you know, I mean, it could be that.
Don't buy Chicago bonds, by the way, just for those of you that
are. So the Bears and the Bulls are okay, but the bonds should be left out.
Yeah,
right?
Leave those alone. We don't follow the inanity of sports. We follow the inanity of the economic world. And to prove how inane it is and why it is that most people stick to sports, the GDP numbers came in this week.
But we never gave the telephone numbers.
No, we should give the telephone numbers
so
before
numbers,
we give the GDP numbers.
Numbers are very important. So if you're in East Bell County and you're interested in things like GDP numbers, then
get back on your medication.
Right. But you're welcome to give us a call locally at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Okay.
All right. So the GDP numbers came out this week.
Yes,
and
they
this
did.
This is a great example of inanity.
Some GDP numbers came out this week, but they will be revised at least three more times.
Right. So the ones that I want to talk about, the ones that came out this week, are the revision of the first quarter.
Right.
So the first time we heard the numbers on the first quarter.
Do you realize how geeky it is to be concerned about the revision, the second revision? The third revision of the first quarter GDP. Gross domestic product of the United States.
Right. What we're trying to show here is that there's a lot of inane stuff that we just have to take with a grain of salt, in this case maybe a grain of sand.
It's more like a grain of cocaine or something.
Something weird going on. Okay, so the first quarter originally was reported as a, I think it was a 0.5% increase. And then it was revised down to a negative
0.2. Right.
And then it was revised upward to a positive 0.2. And now it's been revised upward again to a positive 0.6.
Really?
Yes.
I'm impressed.
So what really happened? Well, the 0.6 positive is much more likely to be true than any of the others because it's been long enough for us to actually do some measurement. That's one of the funny things. In the world of real time, when people want real time news and you're trying to make estimates of activity that you don't have numbers for, they get it wrong when they talk about what's going on right now. They don't know. And when we look at the second quarter estimate of what the GDP did, they say it's 2.3. But as old Baldy said, we're expecting that to be revised three or four times, and it can be very different from 2.3.
Yeah, well, the first half is up 1.5.
The first half of the year, yes.
According to current estimates, which will be changed. And even if that isn't good enough, the Commerce Department went back in and adjusted its seasonal and other stuff.
For first quarter growth.
Not just for the first quarter.
But all quarters.
But going back and lowered all of the numbers going back through since 2009.
Right. So the reality is when we're talking about the economic growth or shrinkage, what they like to call negative growth in the GDP, the reality is we really don't know what's going on for a year or two. We can look back and say, yes, we didn't have a recession then. But usually that's the case. So when you listen to the news and they're talking about things like, is this a recession? The answer is nobody knows ever until afterwards, way afterwards.
And, you know, this is the slowest recovery in the economy as measured by the gross domestic product growth since World War II. And we really didn't start seriously measuring until around World War II. So basically, the last time the economy recovered this slowly was following the Great Depression that began in 1929.
Right.
Now, here's where it gets a little bit interesting. There's another record out there. U.S. employers, as of the end of June, continuously and consecutively added jobs for the 57th straight month. That is an all-time record since economic data has been kept on the United States. In other words, there are months, there's always been in the past months or quarters when employers laid off more people than they hired. So
right.
we have one of the slower economic recoveries in the history of the United States.
But it's been...
But it is...
In one direction only.
So consistently growing. And it is a number of... There's a number of implications to this which are pretty profound. Among other things, we don't get major economic downturns or stock market downturns until growth has been excessive, until we get out of control on the growth side. And we have now also broken another record, which is the longest run without a recession, without a correction in the market.
Right.
And again, the market has never gotten irrationally exuberant.
In fact,
2009.
It's kind of the opposite. It's kind of fluttering around, kind of going, I don't know where I'm going. I'm kind of slowly going in this direction. I'm not sure what... Corrections come when people go, oh, this is never going to end. This is great. And then it drops. And people go, oh, I need to get out. Well, you're not getting either of that. I think enough people are looking at the market with scrutiny right now. It's going to come back. There's going to be a time when people are looking at the market with more greed than rationality, or more fear than rationality. And when that happens, we're going to go back to the good old days of big upturns and big downturns. But in the meantime, what we're seeing is a lot of people looking very carefully at what they're doing. The people that were involved in the market that shouldn't have been are mostly out of the market, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good thing. The people that were involved in the housing market that shouldn't have been are now mostly out of the housing market, which is a good thing from the Great Recession.
Well, I've concluded that the chances are low of a major downturn at this point.
Right.
And that we're in a long-term secular bull market from a prime source.
The prime source being us?
I study what everybody else is saying about investments pretty intensely and about the markets pretty intensely. And when I come away from them each time recently, I come away depressed.
Oh, that's good news.
The end is near.
That's good news.
And that is a powerful indication that we're in a bull market.
Right.
A bull market does indeed climb a wall of worry. And when we reach the point where there is irrational exuberance once again, then the clock is ticking on the end. Now, the last time irrational exuberance was first used publicly in 1994.
By Dr. Shiller.
It was 6 years before the
Greenspan famous
before
moment.
Things turned down.
Right.
So even once we get into irrational exuberance, the odds are we will keep being irrationally exuberant for some time. So I've concluded, and I'm reasonably confident about this, which is scary, that we're in a secular bull market, and a secular bull market probably that will run another decade and possibly as long as another 15 years.
Right. And that point would should definitely have some worry involved, but that's for a later time. We don't necessarily have mm-hmm. to talk about that right now.
And I can also tell you how much a secular bull market normally raises the stock market indices. It from the bottom, which was, I think, 676 on the
S&P 500.
On the S&P 500. Typically, a secular bull market will put one more digit on that. So when the S&P 500, which is now hovering a little over 2,000, gets to about 6,700, then we should be concerned.
Little ways to go for that.
Yeah, and we consider where the Dow is. Again, I don't remember what the exact bottom was on the Dow, but I think it was like 6,000 something.
Right.
And again, that would mean, and you're going to think this is a little crazy, but we need to get seriously concerned around 60,000 on the Dow.
Right. One of the numbers that people are talking about as being depressing is basically you go to any financial news site right now and they're talking about the payroll surprise and the slow growth in the labor market. But as we just said, it's been steady. The slow growth is a little bit slower than it has been. And I have a little comparison to make. One of the issues that we saw in the Great Recession is that people weren't building a lot of houses. And that's an understatement. People weren't building houses. So
they were unbuilding houses in places.
Right. So who is it that was building houses before that? Well, there were a lot of people employed building houses. And yet we're back down to a pretty low unemployment rate. We're back down to a point where employment actually looks fairly good. Where did the construction workers go? And the construction workers...
North Dakota.
North Dakota. They went to North Dakota. They went to the panhandle of Texas. They went to the booming new oil market, the fracking. Mm. And what we're seeing with the numbers that are happening right now is that crude oil is now at $46.82 per barrel. That is very low. And the very should be emphasized with italics and bold and all caps.
Mm-hmm.
When we look back at history...
So oil is large cap?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. If you look back through history, we're now back at in the late 70s, if you adjust for inflation, as far as oil prices go, or the mid-80s when the boom had busted. So that concept of the price coming down, causing the labor market to have a slower growth, at the same time, we're seeing housing start up again. So the people that were off in North Dakota and in the Panhandle and in West Texas and in Southeast Texas and doing that are now back putting 2x4s up in housing starts.
And interestingly enough, rental prices, the amount that you have to pay to rent an apartment or a house, are rising alarmingly and abnormally high based on history.
Right.
And as a result, most of what we call new residential construction that's going on in the United States is multifamily housing, yeah, which is to say rental properties. And it may be a little while before that spills back over into building new houses for people, but it will eventually do that.
Right. Once the banks get a little bit more realistic about who they give the loans to, right now they're basically, when it comes to a mortgage loan, the number of questions and the delays in the loan making are huge.
Yes.
If you have gotten a mortgage lately, you know this because you went through a probably 2-month ordeal of just being approved for a loan, and it used to be a 1-week thing, and now it's a much longer thing, and they say, all right, we have all your information, everything we need, and then they come back the next day and say, we're going to need 3 more volumes of that particular encyclopedia, and if you can go to the rare bookstore and find me your grandmother's shoe size, then we may be able to, that should be everything we need. And then when you provide that, they say, okay, that'll be great. We need to look at this stuff. 2 weeks later, they come back and they say, I realize your closing is scheduled, but we need your grandfather's shoe size as well.
Right.
And obviously, I'm tongue-in-cheek about this, but that is the way the mortgage market is right now, which means that if somebody doesn't have about 30%, in a lot of cases, 40% of the cash value of the house they're buying, they don't get the loan because they got to put 20% down, and then the bank wants you to have in your bank account at least 10% and usually 20% of the value of the house so that they know for the next couple of years you'll be able to make the payment. And what that does is it means that anybody that was expecting to buy a house with a 20% down payment needs to go out and start renting. And if you have a rental house, then you can raise the rent because everybody wants to go and rent from you. That's going to be a temporary situation.
And eventually, oddly enough, well, there's another aspect to this, too. There's a couple of other aspects to it. One is the regulators are really, really, really nasty about this. They really want, they are enjoying digging through and looking for any tiny little infraction, any tiny little miss of something, because regulators' jobs are to find something wrong. But the big one, I think, is the low interest rates.
Right.
The very low interest rates that make getting a mortgage so relatively delightful for the person who's borrowing the money.
The bank is going to...
Also means that the people who...
Not make any money.
Yeah, and this is the thing. If let's say I go out and get a 30-year mortgage or refinance my 30-year mortgage at 3% or thereabouts or 3.5% or whatever it is that I'm able to get.
Right.
Something interesting occurs. Whoever loans that money to me is locked in to a 3% interest rate for 30 years. Now, can I adjust the interest rate if I can get a lower rate? Yes. Can they?
No. They're locked.
And so the willingness to loan money at what is probably going to be a net losing interest rate after inflation and taxes over the next 30 years, and you recognize that the loaners, the people who are actually loaning the money, the loaners, I guess you would call them, the loan arrangers.
Right.
They're very reluctant to take any kind of risk. They're very reluctant to actually loan money because
right,
we're not willing to pay them very much money.
Yeah. If you have a loan from a bank, and we're going to use a round figure of 3%. Well, let's use 4% because that's semi-realistic. People can go out there and get that. If you've got good credit, you can get a 4% loan. After 9 years of haggling with the brokers, you can get a 4% loan. All right. So for you, it's not really a 4% loan because you can deduct the interest that you're paying. So the interest, depending on what tax bracket you're in, can be pretty nice. I mean, that's a pretty good deduction on your taxes. So what you wind up actually paying is something more like 2.75 or 3% as your mortgage. Now, let's flip that around to the other end, to the bank. The bank, if they give you a 4% loan, they have to pay taxes on that 4%. That's part of the reason why you get the deduction, by the way, is because they have to pay taxes on it. So when it comes back to them, they have to pay taxes on it as income.
Mm-hmm.
And the corporate rate. And the corporate income tax rate is a lot higher than the normal rate. So what they're getting is something like
2%.
And if you're
well,
a little more than that.
On a 4% loan, they're getting about
two and three quarters. Yeah, two and a half, two and three quarters. So they're locking in and saying, we're going to get a 2.75% interest rate on a 30-year loan. And if you look at a 30-year bond from the United States Treasury, they can do better by buying a bond at the U.S. Treasury.
Which is why, by the way, Fannie and Freddie are still on board.
Right.
Because they will guarantee these loans, which lowers the risk for the person who is loaning the money to the person who is buying the house. It effectively eliminates their risk.
But they still don't make any money on it.
But here's the plus.
Or not much.
Here's the plus. And I was trying to figure out, why would somebody loan money to me when they could go buy a treasury for the same length of time?
Right. Well, there's signing fees and so on.
But I mean, but the guy who's actually loaning the money doesn't get the signing fees.
Correct.
Okay. So why would he do that? Here's the answer. At least my conclusion at the answer. Because it's a mortgage, you're paying on both principal and interest. Whereas
right.
the federal government, if I go to if I loan my money to
you
the federal
only
government,
get interest.
I only get interest and I get all the principal back at the end. It's a balloon note. In a regular mortgage, you're paying interest back, you're not only paying the interest, but you're paying principal back. And by the way,
they can turn around and use that principal for something.
And as interest rates go up, they can recover their principal
and put it towards something with a higher interest rate.
And this is there's a interesting secondary aspect to that. There's an assumption in the mortgage market right now, that people who have really, really, really low interest mortgages will pay them off early.
And it's a pretty valid assumption because people are doing
right. People are busily paying extra on their mortgage, which means you are refunding the money back to the person who loaned it to you, so that they can invest it at a higher interest rate, and they're depending on that. So they've got someplace safe they can get their put their money
right.
and have it gradually returned to them. Now, let's say they went and bought a 30-year treasury.
They wouldn't get the principal back at an accelerated
rate. Here's the problem with the treasury. Let's say in 10 years that they have a 30-year treasury, and let's say in 10 years they wanted to sell their treasury. Well, odds are interest rates will be considerably higher, and the treasury will be worth a lot less.
They will lose
so
money.
If they really want a 30-year rate, and they anticipate trying to get their money, some of their money back at 7, 10, or even 15 years, buying a treasury is a bad deal compared with loaning money to somebody with a federal guarantee on it to do a mortgage.
Right.
That's it in a nutshell.
Basically, so what we're looking at is that the banks are reluctant to loan money because they're not making a lot of money on the loans.
Mm-hmm.
Until interest rates come up, it's going to be harder to get a loan.
But they also have to have – the banks are actually acting as agents for investors.
Right. And the investors are saying, we want to make some money on this.
Right.
So what can you do? It's not too hard to go out and get an adjustable rate mortgage right now.
I wouldn't either
because that's –
I'd strongly recommend against
it's
that.
It's got a poison pill on there because if interest rates are way up and you can get a mortgage that's locked, you should. But don't pay it off early
if interest rates are low – and you can get a locked-in mortgage.
Right.
Not if they're up. Yes.
Okay, well, when they go up, well, I was talking about the adjustable rate. When they go up, there's a poison pill.
Yeah.
In that in 5 years or 3 years, whatever your adjustable rate is set to, it will knock you off being able – yeah, we just lost a call, by the way. Somebody called in. If you want to call back, we'll put you on the air. Anyway, that concept of if you can get a locked 30-year mortgage at this low interest rate – logically speaking, unless you just really, really, really hate debt, don't pay it off early because with your deduction for the interest, and if you look at kind of what we expect inflation to be over the next 30 years, The bank is paying you money to take a loan. And we've got the caller again.
Okay. We do? Yes. So, caller, you're on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Hello, caller. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you? Very much enjoying your analysis of the home loan situation. And I like the concept of the returning principal back to the lender and then being able to relend that. But it's comparing it with buying a bond, it seems kind of funny to me because what's the LIBOR now, 0.2 or something exciting like that? And basically the banks just making their 3% on simply the handle and not really investing their own money? That's my understanding.
But they,
I'll hang up and listen to your answer. I just love your show.
Yeah, thank you. You just dug into an area that's going to make a lot of eyes out there boggle and cross because what the banks can do right now is they can get short-term loans and basically make money on the loans short-term.
As soon as the Fed raises interest rates, so that will cease.
Right. And what that means is that the banks don't have to make loans. They don't have to go out and buy a 30-year bond. And what they're doing, by the way, when they make a loan is basically they're buying a bond. When they make a loan to you, they're buying a bond from you. And that's why all of that goes on. When you have a mortgage, it is a bond. You have sold a bond to someone to raise the money to buy a house. And it is possible right now for a bank to make no loans to the public and still make a profit by working with the Federal Reserve. And I'm not going to go into too much detail there because I can tell already just looking at the traffic report that people are driving off the road out of boredom here. But you can take our word that that is what's going on.
Well, it really boils down to the fact that we are still psychologically in the recovery mode from the excesses of the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And a lot of the world is still in recession mode. We're going to talk about that a little more, including the fact that the Greek drama that we thought was over.
Yeah, we didn't think it was over. We thought it was on pause.
Well, I actually thought it was pretty much over. Everybody agreed we're going to bail out Greece. Greece is going to do all their stuff. And then a new glitch popped up this week. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, what I'm saying there is I didn't think it was over because it's no more over than it was 6 months ago or 18 months ago. I've got an article from the Wall Street Journal dated 2010 talking about whether or not the Greeks were going to be able to pay back the debt from the new IMF loans. So,
well, and then we got Puerto Rico to talk about.
Right.
The reaction of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico to the fact that they defaulted, they're going to default on Monday.
Right. And how it's similar to Cecil the Lion.
Okay. I'm waiting for that one.
It'll be good.
But we also have commercials to play, so we're going to play some commercials, and we're going to see how that works out. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And if today's August 1st of 2015, you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And things start to get interesting at this point. By the way, the overall unemployment rate in the United States, of course, is down, dragging around 5%. We haven't had the most recent announcements on that, but we have a relatively low unemployment rate right now in the United States. As a matter of fact, 4.7 is considered full employment, which means that there's just not very many people looking for jobs. And a matter of fact, in Texas, where we have unemployment that is down to 4%, if you want to hire somebody, you've got to really, really look. And let me tell you, I've just gone through that process and tell you that it's hard to find people who are interested in working. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The overall unemployment rate in the Eurozone is 11%, and they're really proud because they've got it down from 12.7 to 11.
Right. And if you calculate their unemployment the way we calculate ours, You know, people talk about how we're not calculating all the people that are unemployed that really don't look for work and so on. They do it worse than we do.
Mm-hmm.
When you calculate the way we calculate, they're closer to 13%.
And if you look at what's called the youthful unemployment rate, which people below 25.
Oh, man.
In the Mediterranean tier of countries.
The Southern Europe.
Southern Europe. That's Spain, some parts of France, across Italy, and across that part of Europe. The unemployment rate for people under 25 is right at 50%. And I don't know if you find that to be as astonishing as I do, that they can even function in a world where half of the young people who should be learning job skills
are not.
They're not in school. They're just unemployed.
Yep.
And they can't find employment. And there's not any jobs for them.
Now, there's another leaf I will turn here. We're about to talk about Greece. So I want to talk about some good stuff coming out of Europe. The GDP figures for many of the countries in Europe came out this week at the same time that ours did.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have found is that Spain and Ireland, who
mm-hmm.
both of them are part of the horrible mess that we talked about for many years here, the pigs, you know, when we talk about Portugal, Ireland,
Italy,
Greece,
and Spain. The pigs.
Those are the pigs, and there's some others that are involved there too. I mean, if you want to throw Sicily in, there's all of that. But Spain and Ireland just came in as the fastest growing European countries.
But,
go ahead.
If you had $10 and you lose $9 and you're down to $1,
it's a lot easier to grow.
And
if you go up to $2, you've doubled. So fast growing just means that they're actually in recovery mode now. They have not recovered, but they're in recovery mode. Greece is not. Greece is still on the path. It's a greasy path, the slippery slope of Greece.
The IMF, the Germans basically agreed, and when we talk about the Eurozone bailing out Greece.
Yes.
Excuse me. We're actually talking about Germany bailing out Greece.
Right.
With everybody else saying, yes, we will vote to allow the Germans to expend their money on Greece.
I will vote for Germany to spend some money.
And Germany dominates the Eurozone. The Euro is basically the mark on steroids.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't remember, that used to be the currency, the German mark. It was the Reichsmark.
Right. The German mark on steroids with a very, very slight French pronunciation of some words in German.
Right. So the Germans agreed to bail out Greece on condition that the International Monetary Fund move first.
Yes.
And the staff of the International Monetary Fund has reported to its executive committee, who has to approve the loan, that by the rules of the IMF,
they can't give the loan.
Which, interestingly enough, is dominated by the United States and would have to be changed by the United States.
Well, I'll get into that in a second.
But the point is that by the rules of the IMF, Greece is not eligible for an IMF loan. Right.
The United States has about a 20% vote in the IMF. Because the way the IMF works, they have a quota system where they look at the size of a country's economic impact of the world. And right now, the United States is right around 20% of the entire world's economy. If you look at the population, we're a lot less than that. But as far as our impact on the world economically, we're 20%. So some of that money would and has been coming from the United States to go to these loans. And part of the process of getting all of these countries involved for such a long period of time in the IMF is that they had to have some pretty stringent loan rules on who they give loans to. Because if Zimbabwe doesn't pay the IMF back and then says, we want more money from you so we can pay you back, the rule says, no, that's not what we do. And that's kind of what's happening in Greece. The Greeks are saying, I can't pay you back. Give me another loan and I'll pay you back with that money. It's a problem.
Yes. And the Greeks, the IMF, in order to have a loan for the Greeks to pay back the loan that they already owe the IMF, which is by itself an interesting concept. Require that the Greeks be serious about economic reforms that the IMF has demanded as a precursor to previous loans. And the Greeks have done an absolutely near-perfect job of totally ignoring
the IMF rules.
The IMF rules. And the IMF changes that they had to make, for example, the number of people who are being paid full-time as Greek civil servants who don't do anything.
Right.
So,
otherwise known as welfare in most countries, in Greece it's just called civil service, where you get paid for sitting and watching something on TV.
And we may have mentioned this to you earlier. It's one of the little sidelights of I have mentioned it earlier. But for example, in Greece, if you are in a high risk occupation, and high risk occupation includes hairdressers.
You're dealing with scissors
painters,
there. There are brushes and ladders involved there.
Dog groomers.
There are dog teeth involved there.
So
it's a very dangerous work that people are doing.
The vast majority, apparently pretty much the vast majority of what Greeks do when they work is high risk.
Well, most accidents happen in the home, so even the civil service people might be in a high-risk situation.
At any rate, the point is, if you're in a high-risk job, you can retire at 50, 5-0.
Oh, that's nice.
And you have to have been working in the high-risk job for 3 years to get your full equivalent of Social Security, which in this particular case is 80% of what you were making before you retired. So basically, at 47, you could go to work grooming somebody's hair, being
or
a hair
painting,
groomer.
Or painting.
Or painting.
Or dog grooming.
Right. Or being an artist.
Right.
And you get 80% of your pay 3 years later for the rest of your life.
Well, that's nice.
Which sort of explains why they're going broke. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Jeff, this is Wayne.
Hi.
The concept of Greece borrowing money to pay back their loan is one that is sold in this country all the time.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Many people say, well, let's consolidate your loan and we'll give you a lower payment, and that's exactly what Greece is trying to do.
Right. The difference, there is a big difference here, just real quick. If you get a loan from Chase Bank, which is actually J.P. Morgan Chase now, it's a credit card, and they say, here you go, you've got 12 months of 0% interest. Mm-hmm. You get that, you write the check, you say, all right, I've got the 12% or the 12 months 0%.
Which costs you 3%.
Right. You go, or 4%, or what depends on whatever the deal is. So you go the 12 months. And at the end of the 12 months, they're going to start charging you 8% or 19%. Doesn't really matter. And then you get another offer from Chase Bank for a new card. And the new card says you can make a 0% 12-month whatever. If you write one of those checks to Chase from Chase, they say, no, we don't do that.
Right.
So when what the Greeks are doing is saying, I'm going to take a loan from the IMF to pay the IMF their loan. And the IMF goes, no, no.
Well, actually, what they wanted to do is borrow money from the Germans to pay the IMF and borrow money from the IMF to pay the Germans.
Right. But they're in partnership.
You got this is high finance, guys.
Concept is similar.
Yes.
It is.
Yes,
it
is.
And it is the same thing. And very frankly, unless something changes in somebody's financial affairs when they do a zero interest loan, they're going to do exactly what the bank thinks they're going to do, which is they're going to ultimately wind up in a position where they're paying 18 or 19%. And that's what the bank wants.
Yeah, the bank would really kind of like that. And the IMF and the Germans might like that too, but the Greeks won't be able to pay the 19%.
And it's very frankly, and we've said this before, the Greeks have not officially announced that their debt is unpayable. I will say this for the governor of Puerto Rico when he said, we have more debt than we can possibly pay.
At least he was honest.
Yes, he was honest about it. And
the mayor of Chicago has not said the same thing
yet.
And they should have said it a long time ago.
So, it's sort of interesting out there. And eventually, Greek is going to default. The problem is,
Governor Christie should have said it a long time ago, too.
The problem is that there is no mechanism for Greece to default. There is no bankruptcy mechanism for nation states in Europe and very frankly, we have a serious problem in the United States. We have no bankruptcy law that covers states
or territories.
Or territories, commonwealths. Like, or commonwealths in the United States. So tomorrow morning, I'm quite confident in saying Puerto Rico will default on its municipal bonds.
I don't think they owe the payment on Sunday. I think it'll be Monday morning.
Well, okay, Monday morning they're going to default because they had to have transferred the money to the transfer agent like a week ago and they didn't do it.
I think they have until the 15th before they're considered to be in
technically default. Well,
they've got late payments due and so on.
And there's going to be a tremendous number of people in the United States and in most of them, by the way, in Puerto Rico, who will not receive their interest payment, and if they attempt to sell their bond on the open market, I think they're going for about 12 cents on the dollar right now.
Oh, that's a really nice deal.
Not anybody you know, right?
No. Well,
not.
Frankly,
not.
Frankly, we certainly don't have any. We've been warning people about municipal bonds for a long time.
And particularly warning people about Puerto Rico for a long time.
So, okay, well, thanks for calling.
All right,
bye-bye. The issue is that the debt crisis that was triggered, we saw it as the housing crisis and the collapse of Lehman Brothers and a whole series of things in 2008 and 2009.
AIG issues and so on.
This debt crisis isn't over. The economy is moving from recovery to expansion. But very frankly, until we can get the hangover from the debt crisis behind us, which may be the rest of this year at the very least.
Right. We were definitely drunk on debt for a long time.
And we are going to continue. And that's why we're having a slow growth situation. We're having a slow growth situation because there's a debt hangover and there's a lot of fear hangover. And there's a lot of reason for that. The issue
so
is
the answer there is don't make loud noises on Wall Street because everybody looks at you with dirty expressions and they go pale and slightly green in color. And
really?
Yeah, the debt hangover is still there. Don't make loud noises.
Oh.
Make a loud noise about debt and everybody starts throwing up. And so don't make loud noises about that. It's part of the reason why it's so hard to get mortgages right now.
Because financiers all have hangovers?
Right, because they have mortgage hangovers. And you say, I want a mortgage. And they go, don't say that so loud. Can you close the blinds a little, please?
Yes.
Where are my sunglasses?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of truth in that. So we're looking at a continued slow growth. Which reminds me,
until 2016, I think you are right. And I believe that 2016, we've been saying this for 5 years now. 2016 looks like the year when people actually get their finances in a place where they're comfortable and they've taken enough aspirin that the hangover isn't going to knock them out.
And by the way, last week, in light of what this means to you as if you're an investor, last week, I said we're getting some signals of a market bottom. We were getting calls from people who wanted to bail out. This last week, and I'm bringing up the speed, the S&P 500 rose 1.2% last week.
Right.
Now, is it at or near a record? No, it's still well below its record. But this is the point. When we have a lot of an excessive quantity of pessimism where people are I don't know. I don't listen to the television or watch television, but I know that the people who contact me routinely say something like, "Well, I was watching Fox and then they tell me something terrible that's about to happen."
Well, that's how you sell news.
I don't know that Fox is the sole purveyor of terrible news, but
we would never get a job on Fox. We couldn't get one. First off, we're too boring. Second, we don't say enough bad things about what's going on in the world. We need to start doing that or we're never going to get fully syndicated anywhere.
So the issue is that despite all that negativity and actually maybe because of it, the market is up 1.2%. The S&P at least was up about actually 1.16%, I think, percent for the week is on the S&P 500, 1.2. Now, this is something that's more significant, though. If you went back a year ago and were invested 100% in an S&P 500 index that perfectly matched the market, which may or may not have actually happened, you'd be up a whopping 9.29, which is not much. It's a single-digit rise in a year.
Still better than the bank.
If you went to a reasonably balanced portfolio and you look back 5 years, if you got 7%, you're doing very well. If you got 5%, you're in a moderately conservative portfolio, and that sounds terrible.
Except that inflation during that time period has been almost zero,
right,
which if you look back over the last decade, if you got a 9% rate of return, what you really got was a 6% rate of return. And if you compare that same number today, if you say, all right, well, we didn't have inflation, so the equivalent of 10 years ago, if you got a 7% rate of return over the last 5 years, it's closer to a 10 or 11% rate of return if you consider that inflation isn't being taken out of it.
So if you look at your portfolio and you see a single-digit return and you're unhappy and think you can go someplace and get a higher rate of return, you're wrong. And anybody that offers you a higher rate of return
has a lot of risk that comes with it.
And particularly, and I'm seeing advertisements, by the way, they want, silly they are, but they advertise to me to sell to the public annuities offering a guaranteed 8%.
Right.
Folks, that's
I've seen those go by too.
The best that I can say about that is a joke. The worst is it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Because it's not possible. It is simply impossible for any organization to guarantee you an 8% rate of return. It's very much like the fact that the Viatico company out of Waco
is
now in bankruptcy after promising double-digit returns.
It isn't impossible to guarantee an 8% return. It's just probably impossible to meet the guarantee of an 8% return.
You're completely correct.
They can go out and give the guarantee all day long, but the guarantee is only as good as the guarantor.
And one of the great dangers right now, by the way, is chasing higher interest rates, or chasing higher returns. In this particular environment and in this particular market, in this economy, a mid-range single-digit return should make you quite happy.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't make you happy, then you probably, and you try to chase anything that's any higher, you're going to have a very high probability, approaching certainty, that you're going to be severely damaged at some point down the road and severely injured financially at the very least.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the number of people who have, since 2000, because the people who invested in 2000 or invested with a given person in or about the 2000, if you look at their actual returns from then to the present, they stink. They're low, very, very low returns. Some cases there is no return if you invested in 2000. You might very well have a zero return at this point in your portfolio. And you might think, well, I'm sick of that. I'm going to chase some higher return. And I actually have known of people who, just to use an example, who went with a company in Waco who they were selling life insurance.
Well, they were buying life insurance for sick people.
Mm-hmm.
And then expecting the sick people to die so that they could reap the death benefit.
Mm-hmm. And they were pooling the money together to do that, and they were... At least the people who talked to me who were about to do this.
I don't know if you caught. I said reap the death. But
reap the death. I got that.
You see what I'm saying there?
The people who were purchasing these viaticals, that's what they're called, in pools, came to me with the impression that they were going to get double-digit returns, 12% returns, which is the magic number for a Ponzi scheme.
For some reason, 12% keeps popping up everywhere with everything that is a scam or almost a scam or somebody doesn't know what they're doing and so on.
And if you're interested in looking, you can Google Waco, Texas, Viatical or
bankruptcy.
Life insurance firms and bankruptcy, and you'll discover that, among other things, the creditors committee has discovered that the people who are running the company apparently weren't using the money in a completely proper and appropriate fashion, and as a result, the executives have been removed. And
there are investigations.
Fallout from that
on.
Will go on. But the bottom line to it is, there are people. By the way, you have to keep paying into the company once you start.
Right, because that's the life insurance premium
to pay the premiums. But there's some evidence there, apparently, according to the bankruptcy trustee, that some of the premium payments that the investors were making weren't making it into the policies and they lapsed. They were going for some other purpose, And I'll let you guess as to the purposes because they didn't say what they were.
Money was
they
being
were misdirected.
Spent,
they were misdirected.
But not being spent as it was supposed to be. And, I wonder what happened there.
Well, I don't know, but I don't have any evidence on that. I'm certainly not going to say. But this is an example not of what's going on in Waco, although that's true. It's what happens when you chase higher returns. But we're out of the first hour, and you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. You can contact us off the air at 947-1111. We have a voicemail on weekends, live people during the week, or
800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, and you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to our podcast. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.